baby. Welcome back to the one, the only, the innumerable, the sanctimonious, the festering, the laminated, the plentiful, the cardamom soaked, the dirigible, the bad biscuit, the criminal cracker, the clandestine cookie, the salmonella infested, indigestible digestif, fake fucking podcast. I'm Andrew Steiner, your duty-filled host with poop on the horizon for many years to come. And I want to tell you, you are in the correct place if you are a salubrious criminal with a past that is both labyrinthine and magnanimous. When your mom has told me so many things, how can you resist listening to me tell you things? Your mom told me that on your fifth birthday you got crunked. Your mom told me that on your 17th birthday you were shot by a credit card payment renewal man. And he said to you in your stupid 17-year-old ear that you're gonna get it, buddy. You didn't pay your bill on time and you thought you were responsible enough for a credit card. At age 17, your dad co-signed it for you and you bought a lot of Playboy magazine subscriptions for all your friends. Now the chickens come home to roost and the bunnies come home to nibble and you about to get it, and he shot you right in the arm. Your arm bloated, and scloted all over the cream and the laminated blue dags. And your mama said, "Scram, kids, I got dinner to make." And the credit cards guy, he went inside and you went outside, all your brothers and sisters free-framing all over the yard, pricking their branded microwaves and slipping their slandered clandestine magazine subscriptions onto the freeway and highway for all the passerby to read in their commute back home to their jobs of familial pursuit. And you were ashamed forever because you knew the credit card flim-flam man was smacking your mother around a pussy with his pee pad. And you were all to blame because that was the only way she could prevent him from shooting you in your other arm. And now you look back on those days with chagrin and rectify your internal serpitude with flies and musket broom business, and you can never see the same bread again. And that is a story that makes no sense, but it seems very mean. It seems very accusatory, and it probably doesn't make you feel very well to have it told to you about you, but just so you know, don't feel bad. It doesn't make any sense. I'm drinking grapefruit seltzer with a little bit of pink lemonade in it. I don't know. My mom has made pink lemonade twice this past week. She seems very proud of it. She's like, "You didn't try my pink lemonade?" Because I didn't the first week. And then I tried it and it was delicious. But I'm like, "What? How do you make pink lemonade except for from a mix with some sugar with some flavoring? Do you just add pink food coloring to lemon? Are there actually pink lemons out there? I don't know what she did. Maybe she added some cranberry juice to some lemonade. It's a mystery to me. It does taste homemade because it's not that sweet. So that's the only indication that I have that it's not just fake pink coloring and sugar and lemon flavoring, but I don't know. It does seem like she actually made pink lemonade somehow, so that's amazing. The reason I'm in a very funky mood right now is I've just recorded this beginning of this podcast twice already, and I liked both of them, and I'm very angry that they were, I didn't actually record them, and I'm not exactly sure why they didn't record, but they didn't, and I'm just trying to get past it, make some good content for you to listen to, make something enjoyable, and get on with it. You know, try not to dwell in the past. Try not to steep in my own failures, okay? Because from failure, you learn things, and from progress, you get hernias, and from hernias, you have a tiny second genitalia that has popped out randomly in the middle of your life. So it's all good. It's all gravy. I have to talk about a few things to you. First of all, surfing. Nice. I like it. I went for the first time 2 weeks ago with my girlfriend, Frankie, and I really enjoyed it. She'd been surfing a few times. She taught me a little bit. You know, I'd learned a few things here and there from YouTube videos, but she really took me through the paces, told me, you gotta really arch your back when you paddle out. You gotta really practice paddling a little bit. Keep your feet together. Don't be too far forward. But then I learned recently you can actually be a little further forward, because it actually, if you're paddling, not when you're standing up, but when you're paddling, if you're a little too far forward and the nose goes a little bit into the water a little bit more, you get a little faster. It's pretty nice. That's a little trick I picked up from this book, Kook, I'm reading. I've been surf obsessed, man, watching these surf videos, looking up surfboards on Craigslist that I can neither afford nor ride, because I've only ridden foamies, which is the derogatory term they have for foam-topped surfboards. So they're less heavy, they're more buoyant, they're less dangerous if they fly into somebody else, because surfboards are heavy, and if you hit somebody with a sharp pointed surfboard right in the noggin, you could give them an accidental oceanic lobotomy, and that is something sharks like to congregate around, which is not ideal for surfing and in general. So, but I love it. That feeling of getting on a wave, man, the wave feeling, ooh, it's so good, you know. It's like, it's euphoric. I stood up on like 5 or 6 waves, you know, not long rides, but they were rides nonetheless. They weren't from left to right, you know, along some beautiful swell, but they were back to shore, which is not as impressive in the surf community, but it was wonderful, and I really can't remember the last time I've had such pure fun, unmitigated fun, because, man, surfing is not political. It's like no wave is racist, no wave is pretentious or has ever assaulted anyone. Actually, they all did, but you can't get mad at it, because the only way to cancel the ocean is blow up the moon, and that's not going to happen. Don't do that. That's disgusting. And I, the lifeguard, I did get angry. That sometimes the people aren't that nice. Sometimes they are. So far, the surfers have been nice. The lifeguard, though, he had me get out just because someone got tangled in my beard and drowned. My favorite part, though, is, I like catching the waves. That's euphoric. That's amazing. That was a great moment. But I think maybe my favorite part is actually just the meditative thing, where you're sitting on the board, because you can sit straight up on the board nice, like you're meditating, look out at the ocean, and then there's no one in front of you. So it's just you in the ocean, and you're just meditating on whether puberty will finally end at middle age, whether your pubes will stop at the bottom of your throat in your stomach, because I keep growing new hairs all the time down my stomach. Keep new fluids keep erupting that I was never privy to before, and new ways of getting things pregnant. You know, when I was 13, I got my sperms, but now I got my technological sperms, I got my spiritual sperms, I got my emotional sperms. I get objects and people pregnant in all sorts of different ways now. Every few years, a new one comes about. Mink lemonade, whatever that is. I went to school for music. Many of you might know this or not know this. I don't know. But I used to play the guitar, which is it's kind of sexy instrument. You know, it's like a little petite, curvy, sexy woman. And then I played upright bass, which is like a big Amazonian, thick-ass, sexy woman. And, yeah, those are the only... I never played the ukulele because those are for pedophiles. But I loved me some instruments, man. But I never... always got uptight, you know. I always got uptight because I was like, okay, I'm playing music. I want to eventually be a musician, maybe be successful, make some money maybe. I don't know, have a hit album. And that's stressful, man. And then, you know, got into comedy because I was having more fun in between songs, talking, just making jokes. And then comedy became my main thing. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to do this, I might as well try to make money. You know, and I got too uptight about it, you know, and that's why I stopped having so much fun doing stand-up, still doing it, but, you know, and then it's hard with the COVID, and I'm not living in the city right now, but still trying to do it a bit, still writing jokes. But this surfing thing, man, because I mean, I've started to have a little bit of a delusional fantasy, like maybe I could be a pro surfer, but no, I'm not. I don't want to even try to be a pro surfer. I just want to enjoy it. I just want to do it for its own sake, you know, and just want to have fun, have it be a little escape, a little meditative thing that I do, a little fun thing that I do with friends, that kind of little exercise, a little communion with nature. That's really all I want surfing to be, which is nice. It's nice to have a thing that I love doing that's not about making money, being successful, being... It's not about improving my self-image. It's not about making people respect me or see me in a certain way. I think it could easily become that because that's my tendency, because I've been insecure for so long that I just do it habitually, even though I actually do like myself pretty much recently. I've learned to like myself. I'm so used to not liking myself and looking for external validation that if I don't watch, I will start using surfing as a way to get external validation. But that would be a mistake, I think. I think that'd be a big mistake. Anyway, it all comes back from my dad, you know, kind of being a little bit abusive. I love my dad now, and of course, as all parents were, you know, he was trying his best, and he did love me, and he did try more than some parents, less than others. But he also did some things that are pretty, I don't know about unforgivable, but hard to forgive. You know, he'd call me a piece of shit, say I was lazy. You know, all these things that kind of I started to believe because he said them, and I wasn't young enough or mature enough to realize that I had to address the thing, or else it could take hold like a demon succubi. And I remember one time he threw a roll of quarters at me, which is the definition of Jew-on-Jew crime. And I got revenge on him, and it wasn't really appropriate for the crime. I kind of pissed on his toothbrush, and yeah, I was kind of not really in line with the crime. Probably should have pissed on the roll of quarters, because, you know, that's more poetic. But anyway... yeah, that's why I was so happy to leave the United States when I graduated high school. My dad was like, I'll pay for a trip to Europe if you go to college right away. And I was like, nah, fuck it. I had some bar mitzvah money. I'm going to Thailand. And I went to Thailand, but I really wanted to go to Japan. I was obsessed with Japan, Japanese culture. Not exactly sure why. Maybe I thought I could fit in because they have so many rules in Japanese culture, and I figured if I could understand all the rules, then I could fit in. Whereas in America, it seemed like the rules were all unwritten. They were all secret rules that you just had to intuit or whatever, and I would never fit in because I could never intuit them. So I think that's probably why Japan appealed to me more than anything. But I was scared Japan wouldn't live up to my idea of it, which is a valid fear, because it didn't, and it can't. Nothing can ever live up to your ideal of it, especially if you've never experienced it, because you're totally disassociated from reality, even though, I mean, I guess I watched and read a bunch of shit, but whatever. It's not the real thing. Anyway, so I went to Thailand, because I kind of wanted to be a fighter, and that didn't pan out. Didn't really have the killer instinct that you need to be a fighter. I was more of a spoiled Jew, the only child, than a fighter. But, you know, I had some of the things. I mean, I was athletic, you know, good reflexes, blah, blah, blah. But, no, not. I could have been a fighter, but I wouldn't have been happy. And so I'm glad I didn't. Glad I quit that early on, went to meditate. Then I think I kind of came to the realization, you know what, I will go to Japan. Fuck it, let's just go. Let's see what happens. And as I was buying the ticket, taking out the money from the ATM to purchase the ticket, I left my debit card in the ATM. I don't know why I did it, whether it was some kind of unconscious self-sabotage or I was just being absent-minded that day, because I wasn't even smoking weed back then. I don't know. I had no excuse for being that absent-minded. But I went to buy the ticket. As I was buying the ticket, I think I realized I didn't have my debit card, ran back to the ATM, gone. No way to get a replacement easily. And that was most of my money. I had some few hundred bucks, maybe some traveler's checks, like $300 in traveler's checks. So I used my remaining Thai money to prepare for homelessness in Japan, because my thinking was, you know, either I can eat for a couple weeks and sleep outdoors, or, you know, stay indoors for a couple days, eat for a couple days, and then be shit out of money. And there was a third option, obviously. You know, the third option was go to the embassy, you know, see if, I don't know, have my dad wire me money. And the thing is, I was trying to prove I was self-sufficient. So I did have an emergency credit card from my dad, but I didn't want to use it. And when I got to Japan, I was sleeping in the parks. It was pretty crazy, you know, bribing homeless people with my in-flight meal, sleeping with a Swiss Army knife in my hand in case someone tried to rob me. There was an old man with cats that he kept in cages and fed and cleaned their ears. I thought he was going to rob me because some guy said he would, but that guy did not seem the robbing type. Guy who has a bunch of cats? I don't know. Maybe he does. Maybe he did. Maybe he stole people's items, sold them for cat food. It's possible, I guess. And then I went to a different park and set up a hammock in the park. I had a sleeping bag, and it was November, and it's getting cold, and I, some old homeless lady gave me a jacket that really helped out, and this other guy was camping in the park with his wife, this Japanese guy, and he was nice. He gave me a cup of sake and a hug, very nice, and, eventually, I bought a sweater. I tried to buy a sweater, used my dad's credit card, and it worked. I think I tried it before that and it didn't work. So I was like, all right, I'm fucked. I can't use this. And I guess looking back, it's probably just because there was, no one called the company and said I had the credit card out in a different country. So maybe they reached out to my dad and he told them I was in Japan. That's probably what happened. Who knows, though? I wonder if he remembers. I gotta ask him. Anyway, I then had a credit card, so I was working on my plan. If the credit card didn't work, was to steal a bicycle and ride south, because in Japan, no one locks shit. There's a entire warehouse full of umbrellas that are just sitting there because people return everything that they find. There's people find their wallets all the time full of money. It's a very polite society, and stealing is very frowned upon. So I was like, yeah, why not take advantage of that and steal a bicycle and go south for the winter so I don't fucking freeze to death. But I didn't have to do that because the credit card worked, and I got accepted to a farm, showed up a day early. And, yeah, did you know, speaking of homeless people, did you know that that they are enslaving homeless people in England? Like, I think they just find homeless people, and they just take them in, and they make them do labor, which seems like a bad idea. Not only because it's evil and wrong, but they probably regret it for other reasons, because you make a homeless guy drive you around for free every light. You know, every red light, he's going to get out of the car and clean your windshield. You know, cars are going to start beeping, it's green. Try to make him your chef. He's going to add baking soda to everything he makes, because the only thing he's cooked before is crack. You know, and you tell him to clean your marble floors, he's just going to cover them in boxes. Because that's how they clean in the alleys. So, I don't know, man. That's pretty fucked up. Enslaving homeless people. Anyway, yeah, worked on that farm. Eventually got the debit card mailed to me, you know, but not before they tried to kick me out. Well, I was only supposed to stay there for a month, but I did. And then I was like, I want to stay. And they're like, but you fucking hate it here. You don't like working. What he literally said is, when it's time to work, your face looks like end of world. Yeah, so I guess I had an apocalyptic kind of visage to my face. But I convinced him, you know, I'll try harder. I'll try not to look so glum every time it's time to work. And then, did you know that Paul Simon isn't Dustin Hoffman? No, I didn't either. But anyway, he let me stay. The debit card came. I left. It was great, man. I did sleep one more night in a train station in Hiroshima because my connecting train, you know, trying to travel by train, you know, speak the language in Japan is pretty difficult, especially when you're using like this thing, Juhachi Seishun Kippu, which is like for young people, this like travel thing where you can travel as far as you want in a few days for like one small price. It was pretty cool, but hard to navigate without the language. Anyway, that was my story in Japan, and my story about me trying to be self-sufficient, but I need to figure out how to make that story a little more concise, a little bit more on point. I don't know, we'll get there eventually. But, you know, this has been the podcast, I guess. It's been about as much as, oh, shit! Holy fuck! Oh my god, I wasn't expecting that. But since it's here, I might as well sing a little song. I was running down in New Orleans. A gun was pointed at my head. I said to the captain I was really green. You never said that a man with a gun and got on at the last station. I was filled with fear and fright. He said, my boy, you gotta be patient and fight with all your might. So I went to the captain's quarters and got me a hatchet axe covered in mud. I found a man who pointed the gun at me, and I made him with a thud. I didn't want to use the blade end of the hatchet because I don't like blood. Don't like blood. And oh, what if he was a hemophiliac? We would have had blood all over the fucking floor. So I bashed him in the back of the neck, and I wound up killing him anyway. And I started crying. I said, why, oh why did I grab that hatchet and smash that man in the back of the fucking head? And now I killed a man. Meanwhile, I wish I were dead. So I went to the captain and I said, I'm sorry, I killed a man down in the lorry. And he said, my boy, it's alright, I kill them all the time. What we gonna do is we gonna put them into the coal oven, and we're gonna burn them up real, real quick, and then gonna go on to the next station like nothing ever happened, motherfucker, yeah. So that's the story of how I killed a man when I was just 9 years old as a child laborer. I was really, really strong for my age, and I was really ferocious, and now I hate myself. So next time you're working on the train when you're 9 years old and you got a hatchet axe in your hand and a man point a gun at your face, and remember this song. Remember, use the blade of Dan and just chop into his shoulder or something, and probably be better off than hitting him in the back of his fucking neck, you dumbass little kid. And that is this episode of Fake Podcast. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories, the jokes, the songs, all of the above, the vulnerable recitations, the nonsensical poetics, and the prattling on. And thank you. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. Keep an eye out for Knowledge Daddies coming soon. Subscribe to them on Instagram at knowledge.daddies. Have a great and wonderful week. You are the best. You are strong. You are amazing angels of diarrheal blasphemy. You can do it. You're gonna be successful and happy. I believe in you. Success and happiness are coming. They're right around the corner. Keep going. Go!